A bill to ease the baby formula shortage for low-income families is on its way to President Biden's desk to be signed into law. It passed quickly and with bipartisan support this week, something that is rare in politics these days.
But politicians still found lots of things to fight over, no surprise. Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us. Francesca Chambers is White House correspondent for USA Today, and Paul Kane is congressional reporter for The Washington Post. Hello to both of you.
Good afternoon. Hey there.
So, Paul, let's start with you. Lawmakers were able to agree on a bill to help low-income families get baby formula, but there was a different bill that nearly 200 Republicans in the House voted against that would have given the FDA $28 million to address a supply shortage in part by hiring more factory inspectors. Here's Texas Republican Congresswoman Kay Granger, who argued that there was already money available to fix the problem.
My question is, why can't these existing funds be spent? Ultimately, I fear that H.R. 7790 will not put more formula on store shelves, and that's why I'm opposing this bill.
Worth noting, Paul, that Republicans have been criticizing the White House for not doing enough here.
I think this is an issue that like a lot of other issues, there's not a whole lot of power that Congress really has to get anything done to fix this particular supply chain issue. And, you know, I think the Democrats came up with a bill that when you really look at it, it's $28 million is you know, literally a real drop in the bucket of what would actually be needed to unlock the whole private sector to get this baby formula crisis fixed. And I think Republicans simply just are going to vote against this as a way of trying to say that they're just against anything that Democrats are putting forward as the midterms are coming closer. In general, when you're talking about $28 million, that's the I think there are speed trap video cameras in Washington, D.C. that probably collect more in local revenue than $28 million. So it wasn't, it is mostly, I think, a symbolic way for Democrats to try and say they're addressing a crisis. And Republicans are simply marching in partisan lines to try to say that they don't want to help Democrats get out of a crisis. This is where we are with just five and a half months to go before the midterm elections.
And Francesca, yesterday, we should say Connecticut Democrat Rosa DeLauro grilled the head of the FDA, Dr. Robert Califf, about why the FDA did not follow up quickly enough to whistleblower report that came out last year that exposed the problem of making baby formula. He said production at a factory in Michigan could resume next week, but that means that store shelves could still be empty for weeks. To what extent was the White House really caught off guard here?
Well, the White House has come under criticism from lawmakers for not invoking the Defense Production Act quicker in order to make sure that baby formula manufacturers were getting the ingredients that are key to making that formula faster than anyone else in the industry. And so we saw the White House did that this past week. But even then, it will take some time for that to kick in. And they now have called this Operation Fly Formula, and they're going to be having formula also shipped in from Switzerland to the United States. But DOD has said that it's actively working on the request to identify a commercial aircraft to do that. So at this point, again, the administration working on it, but there may not be quick fixes to this.
Francesca, I want to ask you about one other vote in Congress this week. That's yesterday in the Senate. Lawmakers approved $40 billion in emergency military and humanitarian aid to Ukraine. 11 senators, all Republicans, voted against it. Now, is that a signal, to your mind, of more bipartisanship, or is it a sign that there is some growing isolationism in the Republican Party as the war in Ukraine continues?
Well, not necessarily, perhaps growing isolationism. You know, some of these senators had always been of that mindset, right, that they didn't necessarily want to spend that much. And we've also heard from senators also that they want to see accountability for the money that the Senate is approving, that they're sending there, that $40 billion more money than the White House initially requested. And so that's certainly a question that they have on their mind, and also how much money the U.S. is committing to the overall effort. This would get the U.S. through roughly the end of the year, according to the Biden administration. But no one knows how long this will continue and how much money it could cost overall in this effort.
All right, Paul Kane, let's move on to the politics of the Buffalo shooting. Unfortunately, the accused shooter in Buffalo was the latest gunman to cite fears that whites are being replaced by immigrants. This is something known as replacement theory. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was among the Democrats gathered on the Capitol steps yesterday to call out conservative Republicans for fanning that conspiracy theory. Let's listen.
Why isn't everyone in this Congress saying, I reject replacement theory?
Well, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says this is all politics. At the same time, members of his own leadership team, like New York's Elise Stefanik, have been using replacement theory language. What do you make of all this, and do you see it changing after the Buffalo shooting?
The sad state of affairs of Capitol Hill is that there's not, when it comes to gun violence, nothing ever changes. We have now had, in the last 12 years, there has been a mass shooting that involved a Democratic House member at the time, Gabrielle Giffords, in Tucson. There was a mass shooting that targeted House Republicans on a baseball field. There was mass shootings inside schools, and nothing really ever changes. This particular one has elevated the issue of racism into a higher position in all of these mass shootings. It is something that, you know, that has been on the fringes of Republican Party talking points for a while now. But, you know, you're now seeing people like Stefanik start to embrace some of this because it makes her more Trumpy in her conference. And it is an issue that Democrats will try to use against Republicans, but I think Republicans, by and large, are just locked into a midterm strategy that they're just going to ignore the Democratic attempts on culture war stuff and instead focus entirely on inflation and economics. I think it will be something that if Kevin McCarthy wins the majority and becomes House Speaker, it may be something that becomes more difficult for him to handle as some of his own members now in the majority get more attention than they do when they're in the minority. And they start to hold positions of actual influence and subcommittee chairmanships and committee chairmanships, and then you will he may regret some of his non-leadership actions in these last couple years.
Francesca, in the political realm here, you can talk about Pennsylvania and the primaries there. What did we learn this week from the primary results?
Well, one thing we learned from the primary results there is when you look at former President Donald Trump's endorsements, or maybe perhaps, you know, the lack of primary results so far, one key thing that we're seeing when he endorses in a race as late as he did like that one is that votes and ballots had already been cast. And when he comes in late like that, it may not be able to change the outcome. Now, again, we still don't know the entire outcome there, but when he had a lot more time, for instance, he endorsed Ted Budd in North Carolina much earlier than that, he was able to pull it out and make it very, you know, pull ahead in that race very quickly. But when he did something that was a little bit closer to that time, voters may just not have had enough time to know who he had endorsed in that race. And again, some of them had already begun casting ballots in that race.
Paul, primaries coming up in Alabama, Georgia, and Arkansas next week. What are you going to be watching for?
I'm going to be watching for, I think the most interesting thing in Georgia right now is what's going to happen with the Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger. He was the election official who Donald Trump tried to intimidate and bully into, you know, a real criminal act of just finding 11,800 or so votes to try and declare Trump the winner of Georgia. And Trump has sort of made him a real boogeyman. He's tried to anyway. There's a lot of focus on the governor's race because he really dislikes Brian Kemp, the Republican governor there, who also did not buckle. But Brian Kemp's going to win. He's going to win by a huge margin over Trump, David Perdue. And Herschel Walker is going to win the Senate nomination going away. So that's kind of like a split verdict for Trump. But if Raffensperger wins the Secretary of State race, or comes, he may be forced into a runoff. If he gets in the first place spot and by a large margin, even if he has to go to a runoff, that'll be a real dent in Trump's armor, because this is a state that he has focused on so much in Georgia, and this is the direct election official that he is most upset with, and he has not been able to sort of get his preferred candidate, Jody Heiss, the Republican congressman, going.
Well, there is no doubt we're going to keep a close eye on Georgia and those other states next week. Paul King, congressional reporter for The Washington Post, and Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent for USA Today. Thanks so much to both of you. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Sure thing. Thanks, Peter and Lisa.